Sulaiman, the governor of Medina. So I can't implement this order. The third name is of Hamida, the wife of the sixth imam. We know that she cannot be imam or khalifa or nabi or rasul anyway. The fourth name is Abdullah, the older surviving son of sixth imam. And the fifth name is of Musa al-Kazim, the younger son of the sixth imam. Now, if you look at this, imam has already confused the enemies. So they don't know who. And with Mansur's name there, he cannot go and say, kill whomever you find mentioned in this wasiyat. But the Shias knew that the name of Mansur and Muhammad bin Sulaiman is there just to, you know, misguide the enemies, confuse the enemy. Hamida Khatun, she is very respected lady in the Shia community, but she cannot be the imam. So you eliminate her name also. Then you are left with two names, Abdullah and Musa. The Shias know Abdullah is older one, Musa is younger one. If the older one was worthy of becoming the imam, imam would not have mentioned the younger one. And so you eliminate the name of Abdullah also, and that's where you get the indication that the waris and the naib and the successor of the sixth imam is none other than Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam. So brothers and sisters, this deen and mazhab has not come to us that easily. Cherish this. Value this. There is sacrifices that which has gone in every generation before this deen and mazhab came to us. It was not that easy for, you know, this deen to survive.
Listening to this episode of Dialogue, don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight. A vocal minority in the U.S. are demanding not gun bans, but book bans, trying to suppress the teaching of the U.S. deep-seated systematic racism. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan, writers. This article is published under the heading The Buffalo Massacre, Banning Books, and Systematic Racism. Stay tuned for more. Ten people were slaughtered in Buffalo recently, killed at a supermarket in the heart of the black community. The gunman, an 18-year-old self-professed white supremacist armed with a legally purchased Bushmaster AR-15 style semi-automatic rifle. His goal, based on rambling, poisonous 180-page document he posted online, was to kill as many blacks as possible. Of the 13 victims, including three who were injured, 11 were African-American. The killer live-streamed the massacre on the social media video website Twitch. While the Amazon-owned site pulled down the gruesome video within minutes, it was immediately posted, then accessed by millions on other internet platforms. challenging racist violence demands an understanding of U.S. true history. Instead, a vocal minority in the U.S. are demanding not gun bans, but book bans, trying to suppress the teaching of U.S. deep-seated systematic racism. The Buffalo shooter espoused a conspiracy theory known as the Great Replacement, which wrongly posits that traditional native-born white majorities are being replaced by people of color, immigrants, and Muslims, aided and abetted by a left-wing globalist elite. This new population, the racist replacement theory maintains, compliantly votes according to the dictates of their supposed Democratic Party sponsors. The killer who is in custody directed his animus at replacers, as he called them, principally African Americans. His slapdash screed, which borrows heavily from another one posted by the racist mass murderer who perpetrated the Christchurch, New Zealand mosque massacres in 2019, betrays a profound ignorance of the history and racism in the United States of America. Abram X. Kendi, founding director of Boston University Center for Anti-Racist Research, warned on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, this crisis of white supremacist domestic terror is likely to get worse. Studies have shown that anti-racist education, that anti-racist books serve in a protective fashion, particularly for white youth when they are exposed to white supremacy, because through learning about the history of white supremacy, they are better able to recognize it. Several of Kendi's books have been banned or targeted for removal from school curricula and libraries, including the National Book Award-winning Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. Texas Senator Ted Cruz drove Kendi's children's book, Anti-Racist Baby, onto bestseller list after denouncing it and several other books during the Senate confirmation hearings of African-American Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson. Professor Kendi continued, anti-racist education, first and foremost, is teaching children about the history of white supremacist ideology, the role that white supremacist ideology played in racial slavery, in settler colonialism, in Jim Crow. It's teaching children U.S. racial reality so that they can see that, though Americans look different, though Americans maybe speak differently, they are all equals, but the cause of these inequities are indeed racism. The domestic terrorist in this case reportedly chose Buffalo after searching zip codes close to his overwhelmingly white hometown of Conklin, New York. He then traveled several hours to Buffalo's Kingsley neighborhood and targeted the Tops Friendly Market on Jefferson Avenue. Why the supermarket? India Walton, a former Buffalo mayoral candidate and senior strategic organizer with the progressive organization Roots Action, explained on Democracy Now!. We know that 80% of the population of the east side of Buffalo are people of color, are black people specifically, and they have one place to shop. We have dubbed it food apartheid because it is a policy decision. The fact that there is no food on the east side of Buffalo and there is not the availability of these basic services is a policy choice. There are people who actively chose to not provide services in this community. For a long time, we've been told that this Tops on Jefferson, we are lucky to have it because no one else wants to come into the neighborhood. Thank you. The Buffalo mass murderer also considered additional targets, either a church or a school. According to online chats attributed to him, he feared the school would have too much security. Fortunately, he was stopped at the supermarket. White supremacists are making the case that it's the people of color, that they're the source of their pain, which is something that many of these young white male supremacists are being indoctrinated on, groomed on, and thereby carrying out mass shootings. Ibram X. Kendi said, adding, "This is only going to get worse if we don't get a handle on it." Limiting access to guns and expanding access to education about the role of racism in the U.S. society and learning, as Ibram X. Kendi's book title suggests, how to be an anti-racist are fundamental steps to stem the horror of hate and heal these long festering wounds.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently observing the third sermon so as to grasp some of the details regarding the wisdom behind Imam Ali alayhi salam's governance. We came across this statement where Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about the Mariqeen, a group of people called the Khawarij, and he says that the moment Imam Ali alayhi salam began his movement, first there was a group that broke their promises, and then there was a group that left the religion, and basically these were the Khawarij, who, because of their weak understanding, unfortunately, they caused a lot of problems to Imam Ali alayhi salam, and they placed many hurdles on the path of truth and true governance. And that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam says, نَكَثَتْ طَائِفَةٌ وَمَرَقَتْ أُخْرَى. He complains, he said, one group broke their promises and another group, they left the religion swiftly. They thought they were religious, they assumed that they were pious and good, but unfortunately their hearts were blind.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Oh,
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about this group of people called the Mariqeen, the Khawarij. Yes, this group were religious, holy, seemingly holy, believing, seemingly believing, morally upright, apparently. They would beseech to Allah in the middle of the nights. They would cry and weep to God. But unfortunately, they were weak-minded, ignorant, foolish, and crooked in their thinking. They were biased. They were fundamentalists without thought. If there is a fundamentalist person but has thought, then apparently, that's a very good thing. We should be fundamentalists. We should have good fundamentals which we stick to and adhere to. But if that is without thought and understanding, then that can be very dangerous. That form of submissiveness is rather a dangerous thing that can destroy a person. And that is why in another place Imam Ali alayhi salam says, in another section of his words, he says, Al-Muta'abbid bi-ghayri ilmin ka-himari al-tahuna, that a submissive person, a subservient person, a person who worships but without knowledge, is like a donkey that turns around, a grinding machine. كَحِمَارِ الطَّاحُونَ. You know, in the olden days, they would take the grinding machine. There would be some stones that would grind, the wheat. And there would be a stone on top and a stone below. And they would all be circular in shape. The stone on top would have a stick connected to it, like a pole connected to it. And that pole would be connected to an animal like a donkey. And then they would close the eyes of the donkey and they would make the donkey walk. They would drive the donkey. And the donkey would continuously walk in circles. And as the donkey would walk in circles, he would push the pole, and the pole would turn the rock that was on top, the rock that was lying on top of the other rock. And as it would turn, it would cause a grinding effect to happen, and therefore they would make a flour in that way. So Imam Ali alayhi salam says, the one who worships without thinking is like this donkey who is used to turn around the pivot of this grinding machine.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are talking about this group called the Mariqeen or the Khawarij. And Imam Ali alayhi salam, he compares these people to a donkey that is whose eyes are closed, and whose eyes have been closed by a cloth, let's say, and is just turning around in circles, trying to push that grinding machine, as I explained in the previous segment. Now, this poor donkey, right? If he would be left to walk in a straight line, he would have probably traversed from Medina, let's say in Arabia, passed by Iraq, and all the cities there, and into Baghdad and Samarkand, into Iran, and maybe would have reached China. But poor guy, because his eyes have been closed, and he's walking around in circles. When the animal is stopped after 6 months and the cloth is opened from his eyes, he realizes that he has returned back to square one and he has not gone forward. Why? Because he's a person who is worshipping, who is moving. He thinks he's moving, but he's moving around in circles because he doesn't have insight. He doesn't see ahead. But instead, if there's a person who has got insight and knowledge, a person who, when he wants to worship and become submissive to a certain, ideology, he gives it thought, understanding, he goes into it with insight and research and firmly accepts that methodology and that teaching and that religion with his intellect, then that one is like a man or like a horse who knows his direction and is firm in reaching that direction. And it goes so fast and reaches that direction. That is how. So that is why we need to be very careful that whenever we want to accept a certain ideology or a thinking, then we need to really give it thought and understanding before taking rash steps. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام أول عوض الحليم من حلمه أن الناس أنصاره على الجاهل.
Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salam, said, "The first reward the exerciser of forbearance gets is that people become his helpers against the ignorant."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's a blessing to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. In the traditions of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find this concept of the heart. Now, in many traditions, we find that the heart is considered the place where Allah resides. And we also find that the heart is the place where the love for Allah exists. Now, we find, again, in the traditions and in the Holy Quran in general, that we must protect this heart. And of course, when it comes to the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find this perfect heart, this heart which has reached a kamal, a perfection, a completion, a completeness, which leads towards ultimate perfection. Now, this heart, again, it must be protected. Imam Ali alayhi salam, when talking about this heart, he says that if despair, hopelessness, al-yas, overtakes the heart, successive regrets will kill it, and the anger of the heart will be intensified. And so here, dear brothers, we find that this is the truth, right? Well, one of the greatest sins, and of course in the book Greater Sins by Ayatollah Dastaghayb Shirazi, we find that he speaks about despair being one of the greater sins. Now, despairing in the mercy of Allah, despairing in the help of Allah, despairing in the victory of Allah. So in general, it means that we believe or we imagine that the troubles and tribulations and problems and hardships that we face in life are so great that even Allah either can't help us or He won't help us. And in both cases, we end up despairing from the help of Allah, the victory of Allah, the mercy of Allah, the forgiveness of Allah. Now, when this despair overtakes our heart, Imam Ali says, successive regrets will kill it, right? So the first step in this road towards destruction and ruin and depression and anguish and anger and frustration and
regret and all these negative emotions, the first step is despair. We cannot save ourselves. Allah will not save us. Allah cannot save us. Allah will not forgive us. Allah will not find us a solution to our problems. And what happens is that then successive regrets come. Well, why didn't Allah help me? Allah should have helped me. This didn't happen. That didn't happen. This didn't get accomplished. That didn't get accomplished. This negative regret continuously, because it stems upon despair, starts to kill the heart. And eventually, the heart becomes so filled with despair and regret over the past and even perhaps the present that it is overwhelmed with anger, and anger is a constant companion for a human being. And it's not really a companion. More than a companion, it's a constant torment for a human being. For as it is also related in the traditions, the anger hurts the individual themselves more than it hurts anybody else. And so, in order to protect this heart and make sure that it remains the abode of the Almighty Allah and that the love for Allah increases one way or the other, as Imam Ali says, do not let despair overtake your heart. Do not let successive regrets kill your heart. And of course, do not inflame and ruin your heart via anger. Another profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program. And at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alayka ya Amin Allah fi ardi.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah, to administer His earth and to convince the mankind to accept His plan. Peace be upon you, O Amir al-Mu'mineen. I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon His book, followed the way of life of His Prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto Him and used His discretion to take you away and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you. كل صبح وكل اشرب ايام تبكى عيني بدمع مشتاق ايام قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Do you want to be healthy and feel good? Perhaps you won't find anyone not sharing this goal. Whilst there's a plethora of advice online and by experts, we have wonderful recommendations in Islamic teachings, including the sayings of the Holy Ahlul Bayt alayhum as-salam. They all lived a healthy life and would love their followers to be healthy too.
For instance, I have personally found hundreds of narrations on healthy lifestyle from the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam. Here are tips in this regard. The art of eating. In advice to his son, Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, Amir al-Mu'mineen, peace be upon him, states, "Do not eat unless you're hungry. Leave eating whilst you're still hungry and chew the food very well." Number 5, do not overeat. Overeating causes illness. Excessive eating corrupts the soul. Be wary of eating too much, for it darkens the heart. These are some of the narrations from Imam alayhi salam highlighting the dangers of excessive consumption of food. Sometimes we find ourselves in situations where we lose self-control or feel pressure to eat. Even those may be situations where we may not be hungry. For example, we find ourselves when we have to eat from buffets or when we go from one invitation to another. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam once again links food consumption to the health of one's soul, the nafs, and highlights how the path of spirituality is illuminated with moderation and avoidance of excessiveness. In the book Ghurar al-Hikam, Imam Ali alayhi salam is reported to have said, "If you reduce how much you eat, your intellectual ability will enhance." Number 6, the night worship. At first glance, you might be thinking, how is this linked to a healthy lifestyle? Well, in a number of traditions, it is reported that Imam Ali alayhi salam said, to stay up at night worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brings about health for the body, pleasure of the Lord, adherence to the ways of the prophets, and pouring of God's mercy. This is probably mainly linked to praying the night prayer, Salatul Layl, which can be prayed any time at night, but preferably after midnight.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime military has intensified its attacks in Jenin in recent weeks. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Tamara Nassar, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "Jenin Fiercely Resists Zionist Regime's Constant Attacks." Here's the story. A Palestinian teenager was killed by the Zionist regime troops in Jenin recently. Palestinian health authorities identified him as Amjad Walid Al-Fayed, 17 years old. The Palestinian resistance group, Islamic Jihad, said their member was killed in an exchange of fire between Palestinian resistance fighters and the Zionist regime occupation forces during an Israeli invasion of the northern West Bank city. Hundreds of people turned out for Al-Fayed's funeral. The Zionist regime occupation forces killed a 17-year-old Palestinian boy during a military raid into the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. A second teen was seriously injured when the Zionist regime forces shot him in the stomach. Islamic Jihad said Al-Fayed was related to two Palestinian resistance fighters who fought against the Zionist regime troops during their invasion of Jenin in April 2002. In April 2002, the Zionist regime's military massacred at least 52 Palestinians and injured scores of others in Jenin refugee camp, according to a report by the United Nations Secretary General at the time. The Zionist regime forces also shelled 150 buildings, leaving 450 families homeless. According to the report, 23 Zionist regime troops were dead by the end of the operation. Last week, the Zionist regime forces used a Palestinian teenage girl as a human shield during a firefight with Palestinian resistance fighters in Jenin. The Zionist regime's military besieged the house of Ahad Mohammad Reza Mehrab in Jenin's Al-Hadaf neighborhood at 6 a.m. on May 13th in order to arrest her 20-year-old brother. After ordering Ahad's parents and younger brothers out of the house, the Zionist regime's army opened fire at the house where her brother remained. Her brother retaliated by shooting at Israeli regime troops, according to a field investigation by Defense for Children International Palestine. 2 hours later, Palestinian resistance troops began firing heavily at an Israeli regime military vehicle. The troops forced Ahed to stand outside the military vehicle for 2 hours while they sat inside exchanging fire with Palestinian resistance troops. Bullets were being fired at the military vehicle from all directions, Ahed told DCIP. I was trembling and crying and shouting to the troops to remove me because the bullets were passing over my head, Ahed added. But one of them ordered me in Arabic through a small window in the military vehicle, stay where you are and don't move. You are a terrorist. Stand in your place until you say goodbye to your brother. Ahad tried to tilt her head to the side to dodge the bullets, but one of the Israeli troops ordered her to stand up straight, DCIP stated. She was forced to remain there for 2 hours before running near a tree and collapsing. She was treated at the hospital for severe mental distress and low oxygen levels. After evacuating Ahad's house, where she lived with her extended family, including 8 children, the Zionist regime troops bombed the house with rocket-propelled grenades, causing it to catch fire, and then attacked it with live ammunition. In recent weeks, the Zionist regime military has intensified its attacks in Jenin, as resistance in its refugee camp has grown more defiant. The Zionist regime forces invaded Jenin refugee camp and the nearby town of Berkin on May 13th, as it has been doing on a nearly daily basis, wounding more than a dozen Palestinians and making arrests. One Israeli regime officer was killed in Berkin that day. The Zionist regime forces sought to arrest Palestinian Mahmoud al-Dubai. The Zionist regime troops surrounded his home and ordered him to surrender himself. Following an hours-long exchange of fire between al-Dubai and the Zionist regime occupation forces, which reportedly included Israeli forces firing Energa anti-tank rifle grenades at his house, al-Dubai was arrested. The amount of gunfire aimed at us was indescribable, thousands of bullets. An unnamed senior officer was quoted as saying by Arutz Sheva, a publication supporting Israeli regime settlement activities in the West Bank, adding, I have been in the army for more than 20 years and I have never seen anything like that. In an effort to find new ways to thwart resistance, The fabricated regime of Israel is considering a return to the use of air raids against the camp, a method of repression the West Bank has not seen since the Second Intifada 2 decades ago. Helicopters and drones may be used to secure ground troops through the use of deterrent fire and possibly shoot at armed combatants, the Tel Aviv Daily Haaretz reported. Meanwhile, the brother of one of six Palestinians who last September escaped from one of the Zionist regime's most fortified prisons has died after being shot by the Zionist regime occupation forces in Jenin. During the fighting in Jenin on May 13th, the Zionist regime troops shot Daoud Zobeidi. He was a brother of Zakaria Zobeidi, the most well-known prisoner who escaped in September. Zakaria Zobeidi is a former commander of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, a Fatah-affiliated group. The wound was transferred to the Rambam Hospital in Haifa, where he died on May 15th. The far-right Israeli regime politician Itamar Ben-Gvir visited that hospital shortly before Dawood Zobeidi's death was announced. Ben-Gvir called for Dawood Zobeidi to be executed. The killing of Dawood Zobeidi brings to 228 the number of Palestinians who have died while in the Zionist regime detention. The fabricated regime of Israel is still withholding his body and refusing to hand it over to his family. The Palestinian Prisoners Club said the Zionist regime forces fired at him with the aim of liquidating him. The brother of another escaped prisoner died in fighting with the Zionist regime forces last month. Shams Kamamij, 29, was killed in Kafrdan village on April 14th when the Zionist regime forces opened fire at a crowd of people throwing stones at military vehicles. He was the brother of Ayham, another one of the escapees from Gilboa prison. The escape was viewed as a devastating blow to the reputation of the fabricated regime of Israel and its so-called security apparatus. The prisoners remained at large for days and in some cases weeks before being rearrested.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosro Shahi...
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shia scholars, jurists, and philosophers all across the world of Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers. From the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum to you both.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding scholars and ulama of the 13th century Hijra, originally from India. He is Sayyid Mahdi Abu Zafar, but mainly known as Mir Hamed Hussein Hindi, the author of the magnum opus Abaghatul Anwar. We tried to first take a look at his early life and then at his most outstanding book, that is Abaghatul Anwar. Sheikh Ziyaniya, let's start with you. Give us some information about the early life of Mir Hamed Hussein Hindi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Late Allama Sayyid Mahdi Abu Zafar, or Mir Hamed Hussein Hindi, was born in 1246 according to lunar calendar in a village close to the Delhi, capital city of India. And as his name is showing, he was from Sadat. He was from the offspring of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And he is named as his grandfather Hamed Hussein. And when we want to trace back his lineage, he goes back to the children of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far alayhi salatu wasalam, mm-hmm. the seventh Imam of Shia, with 27 means and I mean generations.
Generations, okay.
Mir Hamed Hussein Hindi started his Islamic teachings and Islamic studies when he was 6 years old. And he studied with different teachers, but mainly at the beginning of his studying, his father was the teacher that brought him up according to Islamic school of thought. And when he was 14, he came to study theology and some way finishing fiqh. He studied Islamic jurisprudence with the Sultan al-Ulama, Sayyid Muhammad bin Dildar Ali, mm-hmm. and also with the brother of his teacher, Sayyid al-Ulama, Sayyid Hussein bin Dildar Ali. Both of them were the scholars in India. Right. And you know, some of maybe these scholars are not well known to mm-hmm. the rest of Islamic world,
yes.
but they were well known at that time in India.
That's right.
And also he wrote a book, we should say a commentary, yes. and the book of Manahij al-Tadqiq that was written by his teacher,
right.
Sayyidul Ulama. Okay. And also he corrected and also tried to publish some of the works of his father.
That's right.
Like Futuhat Haydariyya, Risale Taqiyya, Tashid al-Mata'in. And when he moved to Hajj, mm-hmm. he traveled to perform yes. The pilgrimage of Hajj. And also went to Atawat Aliyat, to Karbala, Najaf, and yes. Samarra, and Qadhimain.
Yes.
And then he came back to India, and from that moment on, yes. his life is, you know,
right.
more brilliant for
yes,
us, of
right.
course.
Okay.
And we have more information regarding this period of his life.
When we studied the life account of Mir Hamed Hussein Hindi and compare it with the other scholars of the Shia studies, we find him from India, something which is very much rare, because most of the scholars were either from Iran, Persia, or Iraq, Lebanon, you know. This man is from India. My point is this. He writes a book which becomes one of the most outstanding, you know, books in defense of the Shiism and the Shia beliefs, that is Abaghatul Anwar. First of all, let's talk about the main intention of Mir Hamed Hussein Hindi to compile such a book. What was the main goal, Sheikh Mahdavi?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That is a good point. I may respond this way, that his main intention is loyalty to the actually a school of thought of Ahlul Bayt, and to defend from the truth. Because in his area, I mean, since he's originally from India, mm-hmm. we know that the actually population of Muslim there, I mean, Sunni brothers outnumbered Shia over
yes.
there. So definitely they are going to have more scholars because of the facilities that they have there. But we see over there one book is being published entitled Tuhfatu Ithna Ashariya. When we look at the title of this book, we see it has been actually written in a kind of downgrading Shia sect. That is not the approach of all Sunnis. They do not treat Shias like this, I mean, to entitle your book in a way that it is kind of mockery or making fun of the thing. Mm-hmm. So Tuhfat Ithna Ashariya means the present or the gift of Ithna Ashariya. So 12 words. So let's look at this gift. And then he, in his book, he's trying to reject Shiism.
A person by the name of Abdul Aziz al-Dihlawi.
Yes, this book
is authored this book in rejection of the Shia beliefs. So you want to say that Abaqat al-Anwar fi Imamat al-Aimat al-Adhar was written as a rebuttal or an answer.
Yes, that was a rebuttal book. But before we get into this book, we have to know that at this, at its time, that book, I mean the book which had been produced by that Sunni author, was a good and strong book in a way that it was circulating among Shia scholars, but they wouldn't prepare a good response for that. By that moment, late Sayyid Mir Hamad Hussein, he comes to this point that he has to benefit from all knowledge that he has gained through all those years.
That's right.
So he will produce a book which right now we can see that book in 10 volumes, although there are other records being 30 volumes or even 100 volumes.
Yes.
But what right now we have at hand is including 10 volumes. And the way he approached that Sunni book is regarded as a kind of very technical and respectful, because it is easy to refute something using words which are not appropriated for the field of actually scholarly field, or it is not appropriating the academic area. But when we look at his work, we see that the way he is approaching all things in his book is really, really professional.
That's right.
And this is because of the author, because he is regarded as one of the prolific authors.
That's right.
He knew many things about the Quran. He knew many things about the Riwayat. So he divides his book into two parts. First part, he actually approaches all verses that have been employed in the Sunni book in order to reject the idea of Shiism.
That's right.
So one by one, he will take all verses, that some of which are really familiar for our listeners, like Innama waliyakumullah wa rasuluhu, or the other verse Al Yawm akmaltu lakum dinakum, and the other verse that our listeners are familiar with. So he takes all these verses one after another, and he tries to actually refute the argument of the author in a way that, okay, Shiism had been and is being proven through these verses. And then he gets into the actually field of the Riwayat.
So more than Shiism, I think it is about the concept of imamat, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
That's
because,
which is the main pillar of
the Shia belief.
And so maybe so many people from our Muslim brethren believe that there is no direct reference to the concept of imamat in the Holy Quran, but Mir Hamad Hussein and so many other scholars have proven that there are direct incidents and events mentioned in the Holy Quran through the ayahs of the Holy Quran that show the authenticity of the concept of imamate and the leadership and the successorship. This is a specialized field of study. I mean, maybe by mere studying the text of the Holy Quran, some people might not understand it. But if we get to the shan and nuzul of the ayat and the different incidents, and we have to know Arabic language, of course, and the exegesis of the Holy Quran, then we could understand that. That's right. Some references are made to the concept of imamat in the Holy Quran too. That's all right. So he wrote it in Farsi language, you know. And I think it is because the Farsi language was the mother tongue of that region, of the Indian subcontinent, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the Indian subcontinent.
Even we have Iqbal al-Lahuri.
Iqbal al-Lahuri writes in
composing
Farsi.
Composing poets in
Farsi. Poets in Farsi language, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all right. So, Sheikh Ziyaniel, let's get to you, brother. What information can you give us about Abaqat al-Anwar and the significance of this book? I mean, what is the high position of this book in the Shia library? Why is it so important?
As my brother, dear Sheikh Mahdavi, mentioned, this book is written according to the book of Tuhfa Ithna al-Sharia. And because that book was Persian, this book is also Persian.
You mean as an answer to that book?
Yes.
That's right. Okay.
And Tuhfa Ithna al-Sharia is consisted of 12 chapters. And each chapter is talking about proper aspect of Shia school of thought. For example, first chapter is talking about the history of Shia school of thought and gives accusations regarding Shia school of thought.
That's right.
And most important part of the book is chapter 7, that is regarding Imamat.
Imamat, that's right.
And Abaghat al-Anwar and many other books, and this is not the only Abaghat, some other books also are written in this regard, they are trying to defend the Shia school of thought regarding the